Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Thank you, Tim, and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. We have an hour of old-time radio for you today, and it's a pretty good show, I think, anyway. We're going to start off with Orson Welles. Now, he did a lot of radio, including War of the Worlds, probably the most famous single radio show ever played back in the 30s. But he also did a program that was syndicated called The Adventures of Harry Lime. And I believe this was syndicated out of England, but it was also broadcast in the United States in the 50s. Well, today's program is called Faith, Lime, and Charity. It's from 1952.
Presenting Orson Welles as the Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime, the fabulous stories of the immortal character originally created in the motion picture The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Karas.
Friends, the title of this story is Faith, Lime, and Charity. You see, I've been told by many people many times that I'm a hopeless case. But they're so wrong. Hopeless? Why, I'm full of hope. And for that matter, full of faith and charity. Faith in the great universal sucker. Hope that he's coming my way. And charity? Well, there's one cause that's always right in front of me. Every time I shave.
And now, Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the Third Man, in today's story, Faith, Lime, and Charity.
Wealthy tourists have always been attracted by the romance of India and the beautiful Taj Mahal. And Harry Lime has always been attracted by the romance of beautiful and wealthy tourists. It was with this idea in mind that I took the train from New Delhi to Agra, which is the ancient capital city of India, where the Taj is located. These traveler's shrines are happy hunting grounds for a gentleman of fortune like myself. You'll pardon my stress on the gentleman. I felt I earned the title by listening politely to the interminable prattle and snivelings of Mrs. Haley, the missionary's wife with whom I shared my compartment. I couldn't know that this innocent chit-chat would lead to bloodshed within 48 hours... and that the blood shed would be mine.
I suppose you're going to Agra to see the Taj Mahal, Mr. Lyle.
Yes, among other things, Mrs. Haley.
I could tell you were a cultured gentleman the first moment I laid eyes on you, Mr. Lyle. But all too many people see the beauties of India and never give a thought to the poor, benighted people.
Yes,
we must think of them, Mr. Lime. Don't you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
My husband is the Reverend Mr. Halley, you know. He's the head of the mission at Nandi Devi. He's given his whole life to these poor natives, caring for their bodies and their souls.
That's very nice.
We have an orphanage there, you know. One of the finest... A terrible thing happened. Such a terrible thing. We had a fire just last week. Here, look at these clippings.
Orphanage at Nanda Devi destroyed by fire. Medical aid rushed to mission. Oh, I'm very sorry, Mrs. Haley.
That picture, that's my husband, Mr. Haley, standing there among those poor little Indian children. If I don't raise the money, he'll be heartbroken.
The money?
Yes. Yes, that's why I'm going to Agra. We need £3,000 right away to cover the emergency. And when we heard that Lady Edith Bannon Murdoch was in Agra, we decided to approach her. She's very wealthy and her family had always helped the mission. I'm sure she'd never miss £3,000. And the mission needs it so dreadfully. But, oh dear, I just dread speaking to her. I'm not well, you know, and with the shock of the fire and everything.
Well, let me close the window. Perhaps there's too much draft where you're sitting.
Thank you, Mr. Lionel. That's awfully kind of you.
All right.
Oh, my, it's nice to find someone who's thoughtful. I'm so glad we happened to share this compartment.
Oh, so am I, Mrs. Hattie. So am I. Tell me more about this Lady Edith, what's her name?
Lady Edith Bannon Murdoch.
Bannon Murdoch.
She's in Agra with her fiancé, Sir Ernest Elving, and his mother. I'm sure her heart will be moved by the plight of these poor orphans. But I'd give anything if I didn't have to approach her myself. If only I were stronger.
Now, Mrs. Hattie, this is only a suggestion, and you're quite free to say yes or no, but I was wondering if it might be helpful if someone else approached Lady Edith on behalf of the mission. Myself, for instance.
You? Well, oh, that's awfully kind of you, Mr.
Lyman.
But I don't know. Well, perhaps it would be a good idea.
By the time we arrived in Agra, the missionary's wife had gratefully agreed to let me approach Lady Edith for the cash. Here I should add, I think for the benefit of those with sensitive dispositions, that I had no intention of making off with the £3,000 needed by the orphanage. But I calculated that if Lady Edith was good for £3,000, she was good for five. Three for the orphans and two for Harry Lyme. After all, if a man gives 3/5 of his income to charity, who can complain? This was a great stroke of luck, a ready-made scheme for relieving the overly rich. And so, armed with the credentials and the clippings Mrs. Haley had given me, I set out to find Lady Edith. Just as I arrived at the steps of the consulate where she and her party were staying, a large limousine drew up. I heard angry voices and hid behind a month-old copy of the London Times.
I don't care, Ernie. I think you're a miserable sport.
Keep your voice down, Edith, and remember poor Ernie's indigestion.
I'm tired of remembering poor Ernie's indigestion.
Well, if you're going to marry him, you'll have no choice. Ernest was always a frail boy.
But we came all the way to Agra to see the Taj Mahal.
Oh, I'm afraid Mother's right, Edith. I just don't feel up to anything tonight. Oh, you would insist that we go to that native place to eat and all that blasted curry. Oh, I feel wretched.
Oh, come on, Ernie. You'll feel better out there in the open air. Couldn't we go tonight, just we two? Remember how we used to talk about seeing the Taj by moonlight?
Oh, I'm sorry, my dear. Really, I am.
It's almost twilight now. The moon's coming up. Oh, it'll be lovely. Do come, Ernie.
I'm absolutely against it. You'll have to wait for another night when Ernest is feeling better.
Yes.
I can't have him out in the night air with his stomach upset.
That's right. Yeah, perhaps tomorrow
it's
night.
Tonight or never. Ernie?
Oh, I think I'd better lie down.
Oh, you're impossible. Now calm yourself, my dear Edith. Don't be so impulsive. Come along inside and we'll have a nice, quiet evening together. Edith, where are you going?
Driver, take me to the Taj Mahal.
Oh, but Edith, you can't go out there by yourself.
Oh, can't I?
My chivalrous soul could not bear the thought of the lovely Lady Edith having to visit the romantic Taj Mahal all alone. So I hailed one of the ancient and unlikely taxis that catered to tourists. Driver? Driver, take me to the Taj Mahal.
Yes, I...
I could have walked faster. The streets were thronged with children and donkeys and debris. And finally, we reached the great red sandstone wall which guards the Taj. I jumped out and paid the driver. His bony fingers closed over the rupees. They touched my hand. For the first time, I noticed the native driver's face. The cheeks were sunken and the eyes glowed strangely like dark coals. I stared at him, fascinated, as he spoke.
Remember, he who betrays the little one shall pay with his blood.
Yes. Then he was gone. I entered the gates. There it was. Taj Mahal by moonlight. The loveliest building in the world. Standing beside one of the four slender minarets, the loveliest woman in the world. As I approached her, she seemed not to see me, as if she were in a trance. I stood close beside her, but still she gave no sign that she was aware of my existence. We stood in silence, gazing at the shimmering reflections in the pool. It's lovely, isn't it?
Yes. It's the loveliest thing I've ever seen.
It's been said the sight of the Taj Mahal marks a new era in a mortal's life.
That's exactly the way I feel, as if this were the beginning of a new era for me. All the old things and the ugly things and the shabby things left behind. Only beauty.
It could be that way, Lady Edith.
You know my name?
Oh, yes. If that were all I ever knew, it would be enough. That and the memory of these few moments here by the Taj.
Who are you?
My name is Harry Lime.
How did you know me?
I sought you out. I knew you'd be here alone.
How could you have known?
Sometimes the heart sees more clearly than the eye.
I shouldn't let you talk this way. We only met a moment ago.
And what has time to do with it? We find the Taj Mahal beautiful not because it took 20,000 men 20 years to build it, but because Shah Jahan loved his beautiful queen so much at the moment of her death that he vowed their love would escape from time. It was at that moment that this beautiful monument was created, not 20 years later when the final gem was set. Important things happen quickly, in the twinkling of an eye. His whole life has changed.
I almost believe you, but I must go. My car's waiting. Won't you let me drop you off, Mr. Lyme?
That's very kind of you, Lady Edith. I'm staying at the Hotel International. Seated in the luxurious limousine, equipped with a correct English chauffeur, she became Lady Edith Bannon Murdoch. Gracious and casual. She chatted of this and that as if the moonlit scene had never taken place. By the time we stopped at the International Bar for a drink, we were talking and laughing easily together.
Do you know, this is the first really pleasant evening I've had since I arrived in India.
Well, I'm honored. Some of the credit goes to the Taj Mahal, no doubt.
Some of the credit.
India's an amazing country, you know, such beauty and such squalor side by side. That reminds me, not that I want to spoil this evening, but did you hear about the tragedy at Nanda Devi?
Why, no. What happened?
Here, look at these clippings.
Mm-hmm.
I handed her the clippings Mrs. Halley had given me. Her face softened with sympathy as she read the plight of the homeless orphans.
Oh, what a shame. Those poor little children.
Yes. Coming up here on the train, I met Mrs. Haley, the missionary's wife. That's how I happened to know about it. She's a frail little creature for a big job of raising £5,000 the next few days to cover this emergency. I understand the mission is a poor one, but does an extraordinary amount of good work. Now they're in desperate trouble.
Oh, how dreadful. And how kind of you to be so concerned.
Well, Mrs. Haley's story touched me considerably, so much so, in fact, that I agreed to help her raise the money.
Have you had much success?
None at all so far.
Oh, that's too bad.
I have a dreadful confession to make, Lady Edith. That's why I followed you to the Taj Mahal tonight. Mrs. Haley read in the paper that you were in Agra and asked me to approach you on behalf of the orphans.
Oh, is that why you approached me? On behalf of the orphans?
Well, that's why I followed you. But once I'd seen you, I'm afraid the whole thing went right out of my mind.
I don't understand.
Perhaps it's old-fashioned, but now that our acquaintance is on a more personal basis, I couldn't use it, that's all. No, I'm sorry I even told you about Nanda Devi.
I'm glad you did.
Let's just forget about it, shall we?
No, we shall not. In spite of your foolish chivalry or whatever it is, we shall not forget it. I insist on making the contribution.
You do?
Yes, I do. How much money did you say the mission was?
£5,000 to cover the emergency and start rebuilding the orphanage, but all this makes me feel...
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Harry. I really must get back to the consulate now. When will I see you?
How about tomorrow night? At the Taj.
Very well. I'll have the money for you then.
In a moment, Orson Welles returns as Harry Lime, the third man. Thank you. And now, Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the third man, continues today's story, Faith, Lime, and Charity.
I woke the next morning to find my breakfast waiting for me. Evidently, one of the native servants had brought it while I was asleep. On the tray, under one of the dishes, I found a note written in a strong hand that said, "Remember the little one." I pushed the food away from me. And that night, I met Lady Edith at the Taj Mahal once more. She gave me the packet of bills, which I put in my pocket with a few more protests, and we lingered on. She wore a simple evening dress, and there was a white scarf, I remember, over her head. You know, if the king, Jahan, could have seen you tonight, I think he would have forgotten about his queen forever.
And then he wouldn't have built the Taj, and we should all be poorer.
He would have built it for you. I noticed someone coming through the gates at the far end of the courtyard. Something about the slope of the shoulders looked familiar. As the figure approached, I saw that it was Sir Ernest, Lady Edith's fiancé. She rose to her feet.
Ernie, what are you doing here?
I might ask the same question, Edith. Come along.
I won't be spoken to like a child. What does this mean?
It means that you are coming back to the consulate with me.
Oh, I'm doing nothing of the kind.
Oh, Edith, please. You must come with me. I'll explain everything later.
Oh, very well, Ernie. I think it's rather rude of you. Good night, Mr. Lime. I hope we'll meet again.
I hope so, Lady Edith. Good night.
Ernie, I wish you'd tell me.
Something was up. Now all I had to do was get out of Agra, and fast. There was nothing to stand in my way. Nothing but a white-turbaned native who suddenly appeared out of the shrubbery.
You will come with me.
Well, who are you?
A friend of the little one.
Well, I'm very sorry, but I have some business to attend to.
Do not force me to use this gun.
Look here, what do you want, Over?
You will do as I order. You will walk slowly through the gates. I will be a few paces behind you with this gun hidden in my cloak. You will not attempt to attract the guards in any way. If you make one sign or one move as we pass them, it will be the last foolish thing you ever do. I, Mustafa, swear it by the beard of the prophet.
Okay, okay, old man. Let go.
Oh, no, you don't!
As the native came abreast of me, I quickly threw my weight against him. It's the only advantage I had. My life was dear to me, but so were the 5,000 pounds. He was caught off balance. I grabbed the skinny wrist and forced the gun out of his hand. But suddenly the other hand was holding a knife. It grazed my cheek.
Dog, now you will pay!
I used my head like a battering ram and sent him sprawling. In another second, he'd be after me. There was a white wall by the roadway. I vaulted over it. I was out of condition. I got to my feet. And then I caught a glimpse of something crouched on the top of the wall behind me. He jumped like a monkey and landed on my back, throwing me to the ground again. This time I was really out of breath. He pinned me down. I felt his knees pressing into my ribs and the cold steel of his knife against the flesh of my neck.
The soil on which you lie is holy soil. This is an ancient burying ground. I would not wish to desecrate it with the blood of an infidel, but it is for the little one. Allah will forgive
me. Wait. Wait a minute. I'll do what you want.
You will come with me with no further struggle?
Yes, yes. Anything you say. Just let me up.
On your feet and be quick. Here, perhaps a kick in the ribs will give you speed, white dog.
Oh!
Now, quickly.
Where are you taking me?
Silence.
Okay. We made our way between the tombs toward a ruined building with a dingy dome.
Hurry!
What is this? The poor man's Taj Mahal?
It is an ancient mosque. Take off your shoes.
What?
Take off your shoes. This is a holy place.
Oh, you take that knife away from my ribs and I will.
I bring you to the little one.
I saw a faint reddish glow from inside the mosque. It was a lamp held by a small figure, a woman's figure. She was wrapped in the women's garment of India, the sari. What kind of creature was this?
We meet again, Mr. Lime.
Mrs. Halley, the missionary's wife. What are you doing here?
Mrs. Halley, that was one of the greatest parts I ever played. For your information, my friend, Mrs. Halley is known by many names to many people, including the police. To my Indian friends, I am known as the Little One.
Oh.
When I had to leave England, I decided that a clever person could make a good living from rich white tourists. I came through Nanda Devi a few days ago and heard about the orphans and the fire. My native spies already had Lady Edith under observation. This was too good a chance to miss.
And so you posed as Mrs. Halley and used me to work for you.
Exactly, my friend. I knew enough about Lady Edith's personal life to feel that an attractive gentleman would have a better chance than an old woman. And so I used you.
You have a fascinating mind, Annie, or whatever your name is. I think we might get along.
Have a good laugh, Mr. Lyme. It will be your last one.
What do you mean?
Your usefulness to me has ended. I want the £5,000 you collected from Lady Edith. Oh, yes, I know the exact amount you asked her for. One of my men cleaned your table last night at the International Bar. Everything you said was reported to me.
Oh, you're quite an operator, honey. Unless we can make a deal.
We will make no deal. You will give me the £5,000.
And if I don't?
Mustafa will kill you.
And if I give you the money willingly?
Mustafa will kill you anyway.
Oh.
I leave no loose ends when I finish a job, Mr. Lyme. Your body will not be discovered here for days. By that time, I'll be gone. Now come, we've wasted enough time. Hand over the money.
As she'd been talking, the feel of the cold, slimy stone under my bare feet gave me an idea. It was a last desperate chance.
The money, if you please.
Help! My ankle! It's a snake!
Ah! A snake! Help! Monsieur, kill it!
She dropped the lamp, and in the confusion, I broke away from Mustafa, but not before his knife had slit my shoulder. I ran across the courtyard, holding a wound, the stones cutting my feet, the old woman's hysterics, and Mustafa's curses still ringing in my ears. I don't remember where I ran or even how I ran. All I remember is sinking to the ground behind an old tomb and lying there while Mustafa's footsteps ran by. I waited until everything was quiet. Perhaps minutes, perhaps hours, I don't know. I dragged myself up finally and found my way somehow back to the road. I was free. I had the money. Now all I had to do was get away from Agra. As far away as I could get and fast. The pain in my shoulder was like fire. My coat sleeve was covered with blood. My feet were bruised, but I ran. Pain soared. It seemed as if I were running down a hill that got steeper and steeper the further down I went. Finally, I reached the bottom. Then everything went black. When I woke, the Agra police were standing around me. I tried to sit up, but there seemed to be a great weight on my shoulder. I remembered about my arm. It had been bandaged. Slowly, the pain came back. Policemen were talking, but there was another voice I'd heard somewhere before. Was Sir Ernest.
This man is the impostor, I tell you. He collected £5,000 from my fiancée for a Mrs. Halley for the mission at Nanda Devi. I checked with the mission and found that Mrs. Halley has been dead for 8 years. He's a vicious criminal, I tell you.
Just a minute, Ernie. Let him explain. After all, there is an orphanage at Nanda Devi, and there was a fire a few days ago. It's not fair.
Oh, don't be such a fool, Edith. Just because you developed some sort of ridiculous infatuation.
Excuse me. I must make out a report. When did you first see this man, Lady Edith?
Shh. His eyes are open. Let him talk. Mr. Lyme, Harry, what happened?
I told Lady Edith and the police the truth. More or less the truth. I told them that I'd met the woman on the train who'd claimed to be Mrs. Halley and had been taken in by her, an innocent tool in her hands, and all the rest of it. And Lady Edith believed my story. Couldn't tell about the policeman. He straightened up and spoke to another officer.
Bring in the prisoner.
The other policeman returned in a minute with a frail little figure. She glared at me.
Is this the woman you met on the train, Mr. Lyme?
Oh, yes. She's the one.
You? How did you know I felt that way about snakes?
Well, I took a chance, honey. I took a chance.
Take it away.
You can't do this to me. I'm a British subject. This man here is a criminal. He tried to do me out of £5,000.
I'll vouch for Mr. Lyme's character, Inspector.
There's no need for that, Lady Edith.
What do you mean, Inspector?
I mean that we're very indebted to you already, Mr. Lyme. We picked this woman up on suspicion tonight. We've been watching her a long time, but we've never had any conclusive evidence against her. Now you've given us the testimony we need. Howling Annie, alias the little one, alias Mrs. Halley, won't be troubling wealthy tourists any longer.
Oh, Harry, what a dreadful experience for you, to be the innocent victim of that wretched woman. I know you never would have forgiven yourself if she'd got a hold of my money.
No, you're quite right. I never would have forgiven myself.
And thanks to you, the money's quite safe.
Mm.
The inspector found the packet in your coat and returned it to me.
No? Oh? Oh, fine.
I knew you'd be glad to hear it. And now I have a surprise for you that'll make all this trouble of yours seem worthwhile. You're coming to New Delhi with me next week.
And so, ladies and gentlemen of the Missions Board of Northern India, it gives me great pleasure, on behalf of your well-known benefactor, Lady Edith Bannon Murdoch, to present the Reverend Dr. Halley, with this check for £5,000 for the restoration of the orphanage at Nanda Devi. Dr. Halley, your check. Returns in just a moment.
I suppose it's true that every tale has a moral, even when the tale concerns Harry Lime. A friend of mine supplied the moral to this one the other day. He just got back from India, and he told me that he'd seen the new orphanage at Nanda Devi, complete with foundation stone, which he assures me bears the words, "In grateful tribute to Harry Lime, philanthropist." Nicely carved, too, he told me, and rather appropriately, with a cold chisel.
Faith, Lime, and Charity, an episode of The Adventures of Harry Lime, starring Orson Welles. Now we move on to the Old West for Have Gun, Will Travel. That was also, of course, a television show, but it was a radio show as well, and this program is called My Son Must Die, an interesting title. This is from 1960.
I'm sorry our fishing trip turned out this way, hey boy. But we can't go back to San Francisco until we know this girl is safe.
Have Gun, Will Travel.
starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875, the Carlton Hotel, headquarters of a man called Paladin.
Mr. Paladin?
Hey, boy.
Lisa.
Well, what in the devil is all that you're carrying?
Oh, it's camping equipment. I come in, please?
Well, yes, come on in.
Oh, thank you. Gee. Oh. Yeah, hey, boy, tired.
I don't doubt it, but why in the world do you have all that equipment?
Oh, it's very necessary for a fishy trip, Mr. Paladin.
Well, we certainly don't need all that.
Oh, yes, sir. Man in store, I tell hey boy he need many things.
Oh, the man of the store. Hmm. Well, did you tell him that we were only going for 1 week?
Oh, yes, sir. That hey boy get time off from job that you promised to take me, and that it's very happy time.
But may I remind you that besides two saddle horses, we're only taking one pack horse.
Oh, too much equipment, huh?
Oh, much too much.
Do a hay boy have to leave some?
You'll have to leave a lot. All we need are a couple of saddle blankets, cooking gear, some fishing line, and a few hooks.
Oh.
And the rest is up to the fish when they see the worms.
Worms? Yeah. Little wiggly worms?
That's right. We use them for bait.
Yeah. Hey, boy, not like little wiggly worm.
Well, there's one other way to catch fish, hey boy.
Oh, Isa? How?
Well, you find yourself a nice rock out in the middle of the stream, see?
Mm-hmm.
And you crouch on it like a cat. And be still. Shh. Very still.
Oh, Isa. Then what?
Then, after a couple of hours, you might see a fish. And when you do, you take a deep breath, dive into that icy stream, and swim after him.
Huh?
If you're lucky and can hold your breath long enough, you may catch a fish.
Hmm. Isa Paladin?
Yes?
Hey, boy, use little wiggly worm.
That's a warning signal for all drivers. And that can be a warning signal for drowsy drivers on long, monotonous trips. You see, driving can make you drowsy no matter how much sleep you get. And driving and dozing just don't mix. Why take chances? Take no-doze, stay-awake tablets. Millions of times a year, safe no-doze keeps drivers awake and alert, helps you bounce back so that you feel sharp, ready for any emergency. How does no-doze do it? Ask your doctor. He'll tell you that no-doze contains a safe and accurate amount of caffeine, the same refreshing stimulant you get in your coffee or tea. But safe no-doze acts faster, is handier and more reliable. Best of all, it is not habit-forming. And no-doze is so safe, it is legally sold on a national basis without a prescription. Get no-doze stay-awake tablets to help you stay awake and alert. It could save your life.
Hey Boy and I left San Francisco and traveled south into the Santa Lucia Mountains. The wild beauty of this part of California was magnificent to see. The great jagged cliffs rising toward the sky and then suddenly slashing off and dropping into the crashing surf of the Pacific far below. The heavy, untamed forest growing to the very brink of the cliffs. We turned inland and rode deep into the Santa Lucias, searching for the mountain streams that would afford the best fishing. And soon we had a comfortable camp set up. The next morning, Hey Boy was up with the sun and standing on the bank of the stream, fishing. By 10 o'clock, he still hadn't had a strike. Hey Boy. Hey Boy, don't you want to eat some breakfast?
Shh. What? Hey Boy, catchy fish.
Well, now, look here. We'll be here a whole week, and so will the fish.
Hey, boy, use wiggly worm, just like you say, but still he no catchy fish.
Well, you know what I think. I think you've frightened the fish away.
standing there staring at that stream the way you are?
Yeah, hey, boy, wait a long time to go on fishy trip with you. Now I catch a fishy.
Yes. What was that?
Oh, sound like a lady scream, Mr. Paladin.
Come on.
Mr. Paladin!
You there! Leave that girl alone. You hear me? I said leave her alone.
You hit Carlos. Kill. I will kill.
Oh, no, you don't.
Gringo. Dirty gringo.
He have knife.
You will die, gringo, with a knife.
Don't you try it. You're all right. Why do you harm this girl?
I must kill her. You must let me kill her.
I said, why do you harm this girl?
Go. I go now. You will turn Carlos loose.
You come back here. Come back.
Please, let him go. Don't go after him.
Are you all right?
Yes. Yes, I think so.
Who are you?
Marlene Carter.
What's this all about? What happened?
Well, I was rounding up stray cattle when Carlos came up and tried to kill me.
You know this boy?
Yes.
Why would he try to kill you?
I don't know. He's like a wild, crazy animal.
How far do you live from here?
About a mile.
Hey, boy. Get our things together. We better see that she gets home all right.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, mister.
Again this fall, we citizens of the United States have the chance to demonstrate to the rest of the world the vigor of our free institutions. But if past history be a guide, an appallingly large percentage of Americans will not vote in the presidential election. In the present critical world situation, and with economic problems at home, men of the highest skill and capacity are needed. The caliber of the officials we elect depends on the thoughtful choice of the people. Participate in this fall's elections. Contribute to your party or candidate. Work for your choices. Make sure you're registered. Then be sure to take your turn at the voting booth in November. During the months ahead, right through the excitement of election night, CBS News will report all campaign developments fairly, impartially, completely, to help you make your decision intelligently, to make you a fully informed voter this November.
Marlene Carter's ranch was hidden in a small valley, and the heavily wooded forest came almost to the back of the house. Its tangled undergrowth capable of hiding many things. Its darkness, lonely and sinister. We were met in the front yard by an ageless Mexican woman who was introduced as Toleta. Briefly, Marlene explained what had happened, and Toleta looked at me, her black eyes strange and piercing. Marlene insisted we stay for coffee, and after the first cup, Hey Boy went outside to water the horses. By this time, the girl had recovered sufficiently to talk freely.
Toleta and I run this ranch by ourselves, Mr. Paladin.
Just the two of you?
That's right. My mother died when I was born, and my father died just last year. Toleta's all I have left. She's been like a mother to me all my life.
But don't you have someone here to help you? Ranch hands?
No. This place is a long way from any town, Mr. Paladin. Oh. And the men you can get aren't the most desirable. I hired a couple of men once. As soon as they found out Toleta and I lived here alone, they began to get ideas. Toleta had to run them off with a shotgun.
Yeah, I see.
Besides, I only run a small herd, and I can handle cattle about as good as any man.
Well, I'm sure you can, but it seems that handling cattle isn't your only problem. What about Carlos?
Oh, it's terrible. Terrible thing.
Who is he?
Mr. Paladin, Carlos Martinez was raised right here, right on this ranch.
Oh?
My father always treated him like he was my brother. We grew up together. Carlos was always kind and good until about 2 years ago.
What happened?
Well, there was an accident.
Accident?
He was breaking a horse. The horse threw him. Carlos fractured his skull. We thought he was going to die, but he didn't. Maybe... Oh, it's a horrible thing to say, but maybe it would have been better if he had.
Why would you say that?
When he got well, he wasn't the same.
How do you mean?
Well, he just... Sometimes he'd get kind of wild. It was frightening. My father couldn't control him. Nobody could. Then one day he just disappeared. That was over a year ago.
And you hadn't seen him again until today?
Only once, when we buried Dad. We saw him lurking in the woods. Toledo tried to go out and talk to him, but he looked at her kind of wild and ran off. Oh, Toledo, did Mr. Paladin's friend find his way around?
Yes, he. He's still watering the horses. More coffee, senor?
Yes, thank you, Toledo. I still don't understand why he'd want to kill you, Marlene. You say Carlos was raised on this ranch. He almost got killed by a horse, which seemed to hurt his mind and turn him into some kind of an animal.
He is not an animal.
Toledo.
He is a man with feelings and gentleness and hurts, just like you and just like me.
Toledo.
I raised him just as I raised Senorita Marlene. I rocked him to sleep when he was a child, and I cried over him when he was sick.
Please, Toledo, I didn't tell
there
him.
There is nothing to hide. Senor Paladin should know that Carlos Martinez is my son.
I sat and looked at Toledo. In her eyes, I could see the pain and torture. The heartache of a mother who has had to stand helplessly by and watch a thing she loves, a part of herself, her own son, turn into a savage. Without another word, she turned and silently left the room.
I'm sorry, Mr. Paladin. I should have told you Carlos was Toledo's son.
Well, I should have guessed. This must hurt her very deeply.
More than anyone knows. Sometimes at night I hear her rocking in the chair on the porch, singing a little Spanish lullaby. The one she used to sing to Carlos and me a long time ago. Well,
can't something be done? I mean, couldn't he be put somewhere and given treatment?
Where? There's nothing around here, even if he could be caught.
Well, what about the doctors? What do they say?
All the same thing. Nothing can be done for him.
Well, still, it seems that...
Mr. Paladin?
What is it, hey boy? What's wrong?
Big man, sir. One who tried to kill young lady. He outside.
What?
Yes, sir. I see him in woods back of house. He see hey boy. He run.
Are you sure?
Oh, yes, sir. Very sure.
He's come back, Mr. Paladin. What'll I do?
I don't know. But I do know you and Toledo can't stay here alone. Do you have an extra room?
Yes, I do.
All right, then. For your protection, Marlene, hey boy and I are going to stay here tonight.
And now, here are Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Bergen, when I'm old enough to drive, can I have the car?
Not unless you learn to care for it properly, Charlie.
Oh, I'm a genius with a monkey wrench. The kids in our block say if Charlie can't fix your car, there's something wrong with it.
Yeah. Now, suppose you have a car.
Yeah, let's make it a Corvette. A conservative red with yellow stripes.
The color is not important. But if it's any GM car or truck, you should take it to your General Motors dealer for service.
Oh, sure, I know.
Oh? And what do you ask for?
Have a credit?
No. Guardian maintenance. Do you know what guardian maintenance means?
It's the story of my life. Like you are my guardian and I maintain you.
No, sir. Guardian maintenance is expert service performed by GM-trained servicemen who have the proper tools and the factory-approved parts to do the job right. And it's available to owners of Chevrolet cars and trucks, Pontiacs, Oldsmobiles, Buicks, Cadillacs, and GMC trucks.
And red Corvettes with yellow stripes.
Mr. Paladin, you want a cup of coffee, too?
No, thank you, hey boy.
Yeah, hey boy, not like fishy trip. Want to go back to San Francisco?
Yeah. I'm sorry it turned out this way, hey boy, but we can't go back just now.
No, somebody have unhappy doggy?
No, that's a coyote, hey boy. There's a full moon tonight. so you'll hear a lot of them.
No, not a good sound. Make here boy spine tickle.
Yeah. I think I'll go take a look around outside before turning in. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Yes, sir. Oh, you be careful, Mr. Paladin. Big crazy man may be waiting outside to kill you. Remember, he have knife.
I'll remember. Oh, Marlene? I thought you were in bed.
I was, but I heard Toledo.
Toledo?
She's on the porch again, rocking and singing. Come here by the window. She knows Carlos is around. I think she wants him to hear her.
She shouldn't be out there alone.
I know.
I'm going out.
I'll go with you. Moon is bright tonight, Toledo.
See. You should be in bed, little one.
Toledo, you mind if I look around a little? I think it might be a good idea.
I cannot control your actions, Senor Paladin.
Perhaps it'd be better if you and Marlene went back into the house.
No. We will wait on the porch for you, Senor Paladin. Then we will all go back in the house.
All right. As you wish.
Mr. Paladin, are you hurt?
A knife. My back. Oh. Get away. And get back to the house.
No, no, I can't leave you.
I told you I would be back.
Carlos!
The knife. It is good, no.
Carlos, don't.
I will kill him, then I will kill you.
Carlos, don't. Please,
Carlos!
Carlos, your mother calls you.
I have no mother.
Did you not hear me sing the lullaby? Was that not the song your mother used to sing to you?
See, that is so. But you were singing to this one. You were not singing to me. Always you sing to her, and she has taken you from me. She has taken you from me, so I have no mother.
Listen to me, Carlos.
No, I will kill them. I will kill them both.
Don't, Carlos. I have Mr. Paladin's gun. So you stand back. You just stand back.
No, I must kill.
No, Carlos, don't! Don't! Oh, my son. Carlos.
She shot me. She killed me.
Oh, Carlos. I'm sorry, Carlos. I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it.
She took you. She took my mother from me.
No, Carlos. Never did that happen. Never.
Was it so? Were you truly singing for me?
It is true. Only for you.
Carlos. Oh, my son.
Oh, Toledo. I'm sorry.
It is all right, my child. He will be happy now.
Come in. Ah, Miss Wong.
Ah, Mr. Wong, are you feeling better now, Mr. Paladin? The bad wound all healed up?
Oh, yes, I feel fine, thank you. Okay. Doctor says I'll be up by tomorrow.
Oh, you very sick when Hey Boy bring you back from trip.
By the way, where is Hey Boy? I haven't seen him for 2 days.
Oh, he go all over. Try to sell camping, fishing things he bought to go on trip.
Oh, I see. You mean he doesn't like fishing after all?
No,
huh?
Sir. Hey, boy say he never leave San Francisco again. He say too many things happen.
Well, this fishing trip was a little unusual.
Oh, yeah. Hey, boy also say it's too easy to catch fish.
Too easy?
Too easy.
Hey, boy said that?
Yeah. He say he catch big fish first time he put line in water.
Big fish?
Big fish.
How big?
Oh, about this big.
That big?
That big.
Miss Wong, do you know what?
Yeah. Hey, boy, tell Missy Wong big fishy story.
You are so very right.
I remember something you said to me long time ago.
Oh, what was that?
Lisa, you say, use discretion.
Uh-huh. Oh.
So when hey, boy, talk about fish, Missy Wong let eyes get very large. Listen with mouth open.
Ah, I see.
Oh, hey. Boy have such good audience, he take Missy Wong for a walk in the moonlight. Oh, so pretty soon, he forget about fish.
Miss Wong, hey boy may not know it, but he's the fish that swallowed the hook.
Pepsi-Cola refreshes without filling. Why? Because it's truly light.
Charlie, you're forgetting something.
Wait, Kay, there's more. Yes, ice-cold Pepsi is the delicious refreshment that goes great at a picnic or a party.
But, Charlie...
And Pepsi goes fast. People like it, so keep plenty handy. There.
Oh, you did fine, except for one thing.
Well, I mentioned lightness and how Pepsi refreshes and how fast it goes.
You left out Pepsi sociability. You know, the be sociable song.
But, Kay, I can't sing.
I can. Listen.
Be sociable, look smart, keep up to date with Pepsi, drink light, refreshing Pepsi, stay young and fair and debonair, be sociable, have a Pepsi.
Well, at least I can say this. Pick up an extra carton of Pepsi today.
Please do.
Gun Will Travel, created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed in Hollywood by Frank Paris and stars John Daner as Paladin, with Ben Wright as Hey Boy and Virginia Gregg as Miss Wong. Tonight's story was specially written for Have Gun Will Travel by Ray Kemper. Featured in the cast were Ann Whitfield, Vic Perrin, and Lillian Byatt. This is Hugh Douglas inviting you to join us again next week when CBS Radio presents Have Gun, Will Travel.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.